Bachelor, 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 live from Rogers Arena, calling Canucks games. It is Brendan Bachelor, Bachelor, Bachelor.
8:02 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in Hour 3 of the program. Brendan Bachelor is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off Hour 3. Hour 3 is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, that's what you're waiting for. To the phone lines we go. Brendan Bachelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks, joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Batch, how are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
We're good. Before we look ahead to tonight's game, we got to go back to Sunday. I got to ask you, what was it like calling that game, that comeback, that improbable of victory for the Vancouver Canucks over the Nashville Predators?
Yeah, it was crazy. And it's interesting. When they scored at 2:47 left, I believe it was, in the third, I kind of had an inkling like, oh, they've got a chance here. Like, this could get really interesting, because they scored early enough that they had plenty of time left. And, you know, then you think Sissons is going to score into the empty net, and he doesn't. And then Besser, with that tremendous play and the composure he had to put it into the net, you kind of felt like going to overtime that they weren't going to blow that opportunity. Although I know in Canucks history, we've seen last minute tying goals followed by overtime losses, but credit that Lindholm line for generating the winner and capitalizing on a pretty egregious defensive mistake, I thought, really early in overtime from the Predators to win the game. And now they've got a chance to win the series tonight.
Do you even dare to make a prediction on how tonight is going to play out?
I've got no idea. I could see it going one of a million ways. Like, you know, the Canucks could come out and ride the home crowd and get the early goal and kind of be front runners and force the Predators to chase the whole game. Or the Predators could score early and take the crowd out of it. Or it could be a low scoring, tough battle throughout the game. This series has been so impossible to predict in almost every single way, including the fact that the Canucks lead 3-1. In spite of the fact that they're averaging, you know, well fewer than 20 shots a game. So I've got no idea. But that's the beauty of the playoffs, and the beauty of a game like tonight is, that drama will unfold in one way or another, and we just have to wait and see how it goes.
Calling the games as you are, how noticeable has the physicality been on Quinn Hughes?
Very. And you can tell that it's taken a toll on him, and I don't think it's just on him. I think, you know, the Canucks through, you know, especially in the third period of game four up until the comeback late, but even at various moments in that game, I thought both of those teams in game four kind of looked like they hit a wall, and there wasn't as much speed, and players on both teams were making more mistakes, tired mistakes with the puck, I think. So it's been a war of attrition in this series for both teams, but, you know, certainly when you're a top player and Quinn Hughes can control the game when he has time to have the puck on his stick, you know that the Predators are going to want to take that time and space away and make him pay for it. So, I think the reduction in minutes for Hughes kind of speaks to how much he's battling through it right now, but credit him after all of that to make that tremendous play at the right point to hold the puck in on the game tying goal. It shows that he's a guy that's going to fight through and elevate his game when it matters the most. And, you know, you'd probably bet on him being able to do that again tonight on home ice, especially in a situation now where Rick Tocchet can control the matchups again and potentially get him away from some of the bigger, more physical forwards on the Predators.
X's and O's wise, stylistically, strategically, Tocchet, you know, gave a few ideas on how they can limit the amount of hits that Hughes is taking. What do you see as the biggest key to prevent him from getting smashed into the end boards as much as he has?
Well, it actually starts at the other end of the ice, because if you establish your forecheck aggressively,
right,
and you are the guy that's going in or the team that's going in and hitting the Predators' defensemen and making them go back for pucks, then, you know, by the time they get it to center, they've got to chip it in and change, or they've, you know, aren't attacking with speed if you're aggressive on your forecheck, and that gives your defenseman more time with the puck. So I think for large stretches of this series, it's been the Predators that have sort of dictated that, and that's why the Vancouver defensemen, including Hughes, have had to deal with a lot of that physicality and pressure on them. So if, you know, the Canucks can be more effective at establishing their own forecheck and preventing the Predators from transitioning the puck quickly out of their own zone, then that negates their ability to attack through the neutral zone with speed and you know, be that physical, aggressive team.
How dumb are I, how dumb are Bruff and I for not mentioning more that Brock Besser scored a hat trick for the Vancouver Canucks on Sunday. We came in here on Monday, and then like halfway through the show, she was like, should we give Besser some love for scoring a hat trick? I understand why. Like the way that it played out, the story was the comeback and the improbability of it. And then there were so many other things that happened, mm-hmm. including she loves getting the start.
And in sports radio, often like when a guy plays well, it's kind of like, yeah, it played well. Like there's nothing really to discuss other than praise him. You're more focused on like problem solving.
But like a hat trick and the tying goal.
It's incredible.
With 8 seconds left. Incredible. And to have the patience and, you know, the focus to finish with time ticking down and not, you know, he's got a little bit of time, but not a ton of time. It was just, it's an all world performance from Besser.
He scores hard nosed goals now, right? He's around the net.
And I just feel like we haven't done a good enough job of praising him. So maybe you can pick up the slack for us.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key is how he's played around the net. Because not only was it the hat trick in Game 4, but he scores that goal where he gets buried in Game 3. And he's in front of the net screening on the Miller goal in that game too. So he's turned into a very effective net front presence, not just on the power play, but at even strength as well. And, you know, the thing that jumps out to me is the composure, first of all, as we alluded to on the tying goal. But, you know, how far he's come and how much he's had to battle through to get to this point, you know, all the injuries and all of the tragedy that he's had to deal with off the ice. Now he's a 40-goal scorer, and he's scored a hat trick for the Canucks in one of the most improbable playoff comebacks in the history of the franchise. So you got to feel good for the guy who, you know, at times people were trying to trade him out of town last year. You know, to be that big of a part of that big of a win for the Canucks is pretty cool. And, you know, to see how much his game has grown and how much he's flourished playing with JT Miller this year has been pretty special and nice to see. And, you know, I talked about this earlier in the year, but, you know, coming into this season, if you had said that someone's going to score 40 goals for the Canucks and someone's going to get traded away, and, you know, those two players are Andre Kuzmenko and Brock Besser, I think a lot of people would have bet on Kuzmenko to be the 40-goal scorer and Besser to be the guy that was traded. So, you know, that speaks a lot to how well he's played this year and how much he's rounded out his game that he's got to that point.
Batch, have you noticed that whenever Rick Tocchet is asked about his defensemen or his defense crew, he just talks about how much he loves all the big guys that he's got on the back end, the big, tough guys with the long reach? And I just wonder, you know, about Zadorov's future in Vancouver and if Rick Tocchet is going to go into some team meetings and pound the table for them to try and re-sign Nikita Zadorov.
Yeah, I think he will, and why wouldn't he with the way that Zadorov has had a huge impact on this series, and not just in terms of physicality and defending, but he's chipped in on the score sheet too. And you can tell how much Tocchet values that profile of defenseman by the fact that guys like Zadorov and Myers have seen their minutes, you know, maybe not drastically increased, but certainly increased quite a bit in the playoffs. And, you know, Hronek for sure and Hughes to a lesser extent have had their minutes reduced. And, you know, part of that is going to be game situation. And if you're protecting a lead, you want your big guys out there. But, you know, you would think that with your top pairing, you would be chasing matchups and wanting those guys out there against the top players on the other team. And in fact, that has not been the case at all. It's been Soucy and Myers that have gotten a healthy dose of the O'Reilly line. And so it speaks to how you win in the playoffs, how you win in a hard-fought series against a team like the Predators. And this isn't to take anything away from Hughes and Hronek, because they've still been very important parts of this team this year, and they're going to be important parts of this team going forward in this series and in this playoff run. But it shows how important it is to have big, heavy defensemen that can still skate, that can still move the puck. That's still important. but that can, you know, bring a physical edge for you and can fill passing lanes and shooting lanes. And Zadorov has certainly done that very effectively, to the point where you're looking at the free agent situation this summer and saying, man, a guy that I never thought they would be able to keep, they kind of have to try and find a way to keep because of how much of a difference maker he's been for them in the playoffs.
Watching the lead up and then seeing Colton Sissons go in on an empty net, did you think that one was done?
Yes.
Yeah.
1,000% yes. Like, I was like, oh, here we go. Well, it was a valiant effort. And then, oh, it's off the post. And then Hughes ices the puck. So you're thinking, oh, it's a defensive zone draw and they've got to put Shelobs back in and how much time is left and all those sorts of things start going through your mind right after. But yeah, when Sissons was cutting down the wall there and had that look, like, you never expect him to miss that. And I'm sure that's one that he's had a couple of sleepless nights since, thinking about the fact that this series could be tied if he had been able to put that in the net.
We're speaking to Brendan Batchelor, Canucks play-by-play man on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We've talked about trying to predict the unpredictable, which is this series, and you alluded to it earlier. Have you ever really seen anything like this where a team has, and I know you threw out the, what was it, chokehold or stranglehold on the series, mm-hmm. the 3-1 chokehold where it might be a little
stranglehold.
Bit of a stranglehold, a loose grip, if you will, with 71 shots through four games. But at the end of the day, like, you look at it from the other side of things, the Canucks have a chance tonight to put this thing away. All they have to do is win one. And then whatever happened in the previous four games doesn't really matter, because when you move on, you move on. They don't ask how many, they just ask how, I guess, in this instance.
Yeah, I think it was Mitch Hedberg that said wearing a turtleneck is being like being strangled by a really weak guy. So it's that kind of stranglehold, baby, at the series. But
with itchy hands. He's got itchy hands.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you know, it doesn't matter how you got here. The fact is you're here. And especially with the physical toll that this series has taken on some of your top players, you know, to close it out tonight would be huge, especially because as you're looking at the other series and the potential second round opponent, the Oilers have a chance to do the same. So you don't want to get stuck in a long series with a physical team like Nashville if there's a scenario where the Oilers are sitting at home and putting their feet up and just waiting for you. So, you know, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to do it. I think, like every game in this series, it's going to be hard fought. It's going to be close. And, you know, as I alluded to earlier, it's going to be hard to predict. But do whatever you can to make sure that you don't have, you know, how did JT Miller put it? Like, that win the other night saved them 8.5 hours of flying time. So make sure that you don't have to waste those 8.5 hours on a plane back to Nashville if you can, and try and get the job done tonight.
Even though I just finished saying it's very difficult to predict what will happen next in this series, I'm asking about a prediction. Who will start in net for the Vancouver Canucks tonight?
I would guess Shelobs at this point, and this isn't with any sort of intel or anything like that, but he played well enough in game four that you can trust him. And if there's absolutely any doubt about Casey DeSmith's injury situation, then it's not worth it to throw him in and then be in a scenario where Demko is out for at least a few weeks, DeSmith could be out for a few weeks, and you have no choice but to go to Shelobs. So you know, unless they're very comfortable with DeSmith's injury, very comfortable that he couldn't, you know, aggravate it anymore, and, you know, he feels good enough to go, I would go with Shelobs tonight, just because the risk isn't worth the reward, I don't think, if DeSmith were to get hurt even more than he already has been.
Game five, the first elimination game of the series, goes tonight, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Batch will be on the call. Reminder, pregame, postgame, and the actual game all right here on Sportsnet 650. Batch, you're the best, buddy. Thanks for doing this. Have a good call tonight. Enjoy the game. We'll do this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
Yeah, thank you, too. That's Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I think we should do some What We Learns. It's awards season in the National Hockey League, so I'll start with What We Learned. We just learned that the finalists for the Calder Memorial Trophy, given annually to the league's top rookie, are in Connor Bedard of the Chicago Blackhawks, Brock Faber of the Minnesota Wild, and Luke Hughes. Yes, another Hughes. Of the New Jersey Devils, the defenseman version, are up for the Calder.
The other defenseman.
The other defenseman. The younger one.
Did Luke Hughes have a like an awesome season?
Up and down I saw from Devils fans.
He did play in all 82 games.
Yeah, some very polarizing blunders, but I think overall he showed a lot as a
rookie defenseman with 47 points. That's pretty
good. He led all rookie defensemen in power play points, power play goals, second in shots, and second in ice time. So he played a lot.
Mm-hmm. And there's no fans in Arizona to get upset that Logan Cooley got.
Yeah, they're in. And Utah are just figuring out who Logan Cooley is.
I guess the other guys that were kind of in the mix would have been a guy like Marco Rossi from Minnesota. But they already have Brock Faber there, so you can't have two.
Brock Faber.
We should make a song Brock for Brock Faber. For the brief time where I know statistically and numerically he has a shot at winning this, but are the professional hockey writers just going to say it's Bedard because it's Bedard? Like, I don't know. I'm not a voter anymore. They stripped away my rights, so I'm not too sure.
It's probably going to be Connor Bedard, but I don't know. He only played 68 games. Faber played 82, 47 points as a defenseman.
He played 25 minutes a night.
25 minutes a night, you know. I don't know. If I still had a vote, I might consider Brock Faber. I don't think it would be an automatic in my book. Laddie, I'm surprised you didn't mention that Luke Evangelista should have been on this list.
Is he still considered a rookie?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought for sure he would have been over the limit in previous years.
Yeah, he's listed as a rookie. Wow. On NHL.com, and A-Dog, I thought you'd be aghast that Zach Benson was overlooked with the 30 points he put up this year.
I'm just shaking with so much rage that it's difficult to speak right now, so I'm still dealing with it.
Remember your
your
brief flirtation with Zach Benson there at the beginning of the year where you were going to make that your thing?
I know.
Yeah, that died
too bad.
Quick. Yeah. No, it's fine. Nobody cared.
It requires for him to score.
Evangelista played 24. Is 25 the cutoff? Did they keep him out one game last year intentionally just so he could qualify?
That would be amazing.
No idea.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay, give us a mooka on that. I've got one too. According to Frank Saravalli, Flyers captain Sean Couturier has changed agents. He is now represented by the big dog, Pat Brisson, at CAA Sports. That was me saying big dog, not
big
Frank Saravalli.
Yeah, right.
This is very interesting because Sean Couturier does not need a new contract. He's already got a big, long contract. And if you think back on the Flyers season, when do you think Torts lost the room?
When he healthy scratched Sean Couturier.
Yeah.
No question.
And we all said, like, you know, listen, we have an understanding, if not even an appreciation at times, for John Tortorella's motivational methods, but sometimes you can go too far. And sometimes you can treat very important players on your team with what comes across as respect. Disrespect, even if you don't personally see it, even if your attitude is kind of like, I see everyone the same way, right? And I don't care if he's the captain. I don't care if he's got a big contract. I don't care if he's, you know, coming back from a major injury. I'm putting the team out there that's best for the team. And I think probably the issue that, you know, the biggest mistake Torts made was not communicating with Couturier. And Couturier came out after. He's like, I haven't even been, like, told. I don't know if he just looked up at the board and he was like, normally I don't look at this board because I assume I'm in the game, but it looks like I'm not tonight.
I mean, I remember when this story broke and there were a lot of people into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket saying that this was just another example of a overpaid crybaby entitled athlete and that the coach has the say on ice time, and if you're a healthy scratch, you suck it up, and then you get back out there and you try your hardest. And I have a very, very little bit of time for that thinking, not necessarily the way that it was messaged. But yeah, at the end of the day, if you're not playing well, and he wasn't playing well, no one is above a healthy scratch. I get that part of it.
But have to communicate.
But you also – well, this particular instance is that you have to have more foresight – because when you healthy scratch a guy that got named captain of the team in February, you put him in a line of fire that isn't fair to him. Especially when you don't discuss it with him beforehand. There has to be certain players aren't owed this level of respect. Guys breaking into the league are like, I can healthy scratch you and I don't need to explain it to you. That's your lot in life now. But your organization made a choice to call this guy the leader of the team. And with much fanfare, I might add. Mm-hmm. Like the press release was talking about how Couturier represented everything that they wanted for this new era of orange. in Philadelphia, and he fought back from this near career-ending injury, and now he's going to be the leader of your team. And then 6 weeks later, you're making him a healthy scratch because he's not producing enough offense.
So let's assume that Couturier changed agents to Pat Brisson so that he can get traded out of Philly. It might be an assumption. Who knows? Maybe he just wants Pat Brisson to try and get torch fired. I don't know.
Maybe. Well,
but he doesn't need a new contract, and he's put it out there to a guy like Frank Saravalli that he's now represented by Pat Brisson. You got to assume he wants change in some way. 31 years old, a bunch of years left on a contract with a cap hit of almost $8 million, and it's one of those contracts that is signing bonus laden, which makes it tough to buy out. 31 years old, injury history. Is there anything the Flyers can do about this?
Yep. Fire John Tortorella.
Right.
I mean, that's the answer, isn't it?
Or move him up, move him to the...
When you hire...
Didn't they confirm that he was going to be behind the bench again?
That was before before Couturier went out and hired the most powerful agent in hockey. There's a reason you hire Pat Brisson. And I think, if I had to guess, it's going to go like this. Hi, Daniel, I'm Pat. I'm his new agent. You're either going to trade him or you're going to fire Tortorella because it's one of the two. Either Tortorella goes or this guy goes. But they're both not coming back next year. And I know it's going to be a little more nuanced language than that.
Agents have so much control, especially one like Pat Brisson. It's like, we're going to make it pretty difficult in other situations for you guys then.
Go back over the course of this year and look at the amount of times that players have strong-armed coaches out, going all the way back to Mike Babcock when he was looking at their phones. How did that come out? That went right through the Spit and Chicklets podcast.
They wanted to keep him on after that so bad.
But who won the battle? The players, because they didn't like it, right?
Well, it sounds like Dave Haxtell got...
Look what happened in Seattle, right? Everything was fine. Ron Francis wanted to bring back Dave Haxtell until the end of year interviews. And what happened? Players said, I don't want to play under this guy anymore. What happened? Dave Haxtell's out of a job. So I would say that the similar blueprint right now in Philadelphia is, hey, your captain and a guy you have on a really long contract ain't playing under this guy anymore. So you make the choice.
I just can't believe how badly the Flyers have lost their way.
In a year where they should have been
Nothing goes right for them anymore.
But they should have been able to take all the good that happened from this year and use it as a stepping stone because they had a good year. They almost made the playoffs with a team that was terrible.
I think the way it finished pretty much took out all the goodwill.
But up until that point, and why did they get to that point? It's because Torts made these really weird, you know, I need to create confusion and chaos decisions. Because he loves this idea of being constantly in an uncomfortable position.
What about Cutter Gauthier going, like, I don't want to sign with you guys?
Yeah. All of this stuff, right? They had a good thing going, and then everything just sort of turned. And you could see it. You could feel it.
I just don't think they had that good a thing going. Like, I think you're overstating it, but that's fine. That's just my opinion. I understand what you're saying.
We had Torts as a potential Jack Adams candidate at one point.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. All right, give us a moo cow on that. Get your what we learns into the Dunbar Lumber text line. I think Laddie might have one on the other side. I don't know about A-Dog. A-Dog is very busy cutting videos. We made him cut a third video for social media.
Yeah, this is,
and he nearly went on strike.
Yeah, this is unacceptable.
You're like Sean Couturier.
I'm willing to work to a degree, but
A-Dog
not
was like, then I have to lift the mouse and the cursor goes over here.
A-Dog has hired Pat Brisson as his new agent.
And told there would be no more typing.
He has got the worst tennis elbow you will ever see all the scrolling he does on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just hard. So for all you guys out there at your construction jobs right now, out there, it's a little chilly this morning, and you guys are going to be working really hard at your jobs. Just know that A-Dog is with you, and he will be with you when he goes home to take his nap at 9:30 today.
Four-hour nap.
All playoff coverage and A-Dog updates are brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of a Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
on my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always dead.
It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. It's what we learn time. On the show.
.34 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in Hour 3 of the program. It is what we learn time. Hour 3 is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. I'm going to have to throw my I forgot to plug in my computer and it's about to die. So I'm going to throw to you to start. You have a What We Learned and Greg has a What We Learned.
Your computer is smoking right now.
I already did my What We Learned. So, Laddie has
Laddie's going to do his and then I'm going to do my Jamal Murray one. Are we ready? 3, 2, 1, Laddie, go.
All right. The update I have is a What We Learned about the Leafs game tonight. We have some drama. Some drama, people. Austin
is it
Matthews.
Drama or is it drama?
Wow.
Okay.
Mark Spector says drama, so okay. I'm going to say drama.
Okay.
Luke Fox reporting that Austin Matthews came out for their optional skate this morning briefly and then left. He called it strange. I don't know how long he was out there for. It doesn't sound like it was very long, but it's not looking good for Austin Matthews being in the lineup tonight for the Leafs.
So the Leafs yesterday practiced as if Austin Matthews was not going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And this is yet another strange injury in Toronto, or at least just
illness.
An injury that the Toronto media doesn't know about, and so they're getting frustrated. This is what Sheldon Keefe said about the injury. For whatever reasons, it's not one of those everyday types of illnesses that sort of come and go. This one has lingered, and the effects have lingered and gotten worse when he's on the ice asserting himself. So... I don't know if this is kind of like a respiratory issue.
Bad shrimp.
Or, okay, A-Dog's going to make the easy joke there.
Uh-oh.
But seriously, hopefully it's nothing too serious for Austin Matthews. You know, for him to leave that game the other day against the Bruins, I mean, it must have been pretty serious for him to do that. And for him to, you know, be on the verge of not playing an elimination game for the Toronto Maple Leafs, it must be pretty serious. And again, you know, Laddie's what we learned this morning is he goes out there, he tries for 8 minutes, then he goes, nope. So I doubt that Austin Matthews is going to play tonight.
If you're wondering
about the Boston Bruins, I would doubt it.
Wondering about the starting goalie as well. Joseph Woll not out for the optional skate, which would suggest that he is the starter against the Bruins.
Oh, that's interesting. Would that be his first start of the series?
Yeah, he came in the third period last game.
Okay.
And looked pretty good, actually.
Give yourself a moo, cow, laddie. I learned that last night just reemphasized how excited I am to see Canada play basketball at the Summer Olympics this year in Paris. Jamal Murray did it again, this time eliminating the Lakers. Nuggets win 4-1. You'll know a couple games ago when they went up 3-0, Jamal Murray hit a buzzer beater over Anthony Davis to give the Nuggets a 3-0 series lead. Well, last night, with another elimination game hanging in the balance, good Canadian kid from Kitchener stepped up and did this.
Difference of 2 seconds, the game clock and the shot clock.
Worst case scenario, we're going to overtime.
Jokic a screen, Murray to try to break the tie.
No time now by the Lakers. I gotta go.
James, a bump, a feed, a print shot. No! Zeros on the clock. The Nuggets advance. They have won.
He is playing unreal basketball right now, despite the fact that he's banged up. He wasn't even sure he was going to be able to play last night. And his shooting sometimes during games can go cold, but he doesn't lack the confidence to take the big shot at the end of the games. And he did twice for the Nuggets in round one. Now, the other part of this story, non-Jamal Murray, is that that might have been the last game that LeBron James ever played as the Los Angeles Laker. That is going to be the story of this NBA offseason, which for the Lakers began last night when Jamal Murray hit that dagger. The Cole's Notes version is that LeBron does have a year left on his contract, but it's a player option year, so he can either pick up or decline the option. I believe it's for a cool $51 million, which is good money if you can get it. There's so much that goes into this. What happens with his son, Bronny, who has entered the NBA draft but hasn't signed with an agent, so he could go back to college. If he does decide to go pro and gets drafted, does LeBron just then go to that team?
Follow him, yeah.
Or does LeBron try and chase another ring? Currently, sportsbooks still have the Lakers as the best odds to have LeBron in their employ next year. The understanding there would be that they would go and move some things to try and draft Bronny so that they could just have the two of them in LA together. If that doesn't happen, some are suggesting, including sportsbooks, that have the San Antonio Spurs at plus 500 as the next landing spot for LeBron, obviously to team up with Wemby and then have that. But if they want to win a title, teams that are there being considered, Philadelphia, and I think Dallas was thrown in there as well. Interesting one is the Oklahoma City Thunder, who, by the way, speaking of Canadian content in basketball, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder swept the Pelicans out of the first round last night. So a good night for Canadian hoopers. Tough night for LeBron and the Lakers. Moo cow me.
I actually had a follow-up question. Yeah, is Michael Porter Jr. the third best Nugget? Like, is he the number three guy there? Like, it goes Jokic, Murray.
I think Aaron Gordon is their third most important player.
Right, okay.
But Porter scores.
My point was that the Nuggets are...
They could use a guy.
No. Just
I know.
They've all been drafted by the Nuggets. And isn't that unusual for, like, people, you know, like, the Nuggets are a super team, but they're not put together like a super team.
Everything about the way the Nuggets were built and kept together and grown and...
It's organic.
Yeah, but it's very unique. Mm-hmm. Very unique in NBA circles. Like, Jokic was a late second-round pick. I don't know if you've ever seen the famous clip of when he got drafted. There was, like, a commercial going, and his name just kind of went across the bottom. Like, we have drafted Jokic, right? Like, no one...
And he might be... I mean, there are people talking, making the GOAT predictions with him.
Well, if you look at him right now, they're on a long way to go, but they're on a pretty good trajectory for, you know, another run at an NBA championship. He's the best basketball player on the planet right now. I think it'd be hard to argue that. He's got all the hardware and he's got all the championships. He's an unstoppable force. And between him and Murray, another guy who there were expectations that he'd be a good NBA player. No one at the time of his drafting out of Kentucky thought he'd be this good.
Yeah.
But it's been really impressive. But you bring up a good point. It is a very unique way that the Nuggets have built this and be able to keep it together. Now you can moo cow me.
The rare double moo cow.
A double moo.
Okay, let's print out the submissions into the Dunbar Lumber text line.
What we learned, Humanoid Edition is brought to you by Get Fire Plan. Protect what matters most with comprehensive fire safety plans, monthly audits, and risk mitigation at $200 off. Visit them at getfireplan.com.
Oh my God, we're having a fire!
Plan.
Would you like to begin or would you like me to start?
Of course I'm going to start. Leaf with a What We Learned. The 3-1 series lead is now getting the stranglehold tag. Shouldn't it just be reserved for 3-0?
No. I like
3-1 is fine? Yeah.
3-1.
Going back home.
You know what?
Going back home, that's a stranglehold.
No. If you're up...
You haven't killed the guy yet, but you got him in a pretty good stranglehold.
I'll make a ruling on this. If you are up 3-1, no matter the circumstances or the context, you have a stranglehold. If you're one win away from...
You should win the series.
It can be a light stranglehold, a batch strangle, as we like to call it in the industry. But if you have a 3-1 lead, you have a stranglehold on the series. I made the ruling.
I kind of like that word, strangle.
Strangle.
I'm going to strangle.
You like the word strangle? Let's not look into that any further.
Yeah. Just like I'm going to.
HR Online 1.
I'm going to strangle you.
It's a good word.
It's a very good word.
You say that to me in the break all the time.
Yeah. I'm going to strangle. I've got a stranglehold on my producer.
Matthew in Maple Ridge. What I learned is that, quote, this ain't junior, bro, end quote, is going to be my new comeback every time my colleagues at work don't hit their deadlines. Watching Nylander say that. And it was funny because of all the guys to be doing the calling out on the bench, it's the guy that missed the first three games of the series. I'm not saying he didn't have good reason to miss them. Like, he had migraines. He was not feeling well. I think they thought something might have been wrong, either cognitively or neurologically. But it was just the culmination of all of the frustrations and disappointments and whining and crying.
For
about
me,
it
was the look on Marner's face, that whiny little, and then you see right. Nylander yeah. say those words.
Stop
and you're
crying,
just like,
bro.
Yes!
Yeah. Yeah. And then he just starts crying more.
I'm not crying. I hope Matthew in Maple Ridge works for, like, the most average company of all time. It's like this ain't Junior, bro. You're like, you're right. This is Coquitlam's second biggest auto parts distributor.
Right. It's got a Junior feel. It's not quite Junior.
Did I tell you, by the way,
yeah.
That I was out in Mission over the weekend?
You did
for on Sunday morning. Actually, I had to drive out for the boys' hockey in Mission.
It's a hike.
Yeah, but I just want to say a congratulations to Mission and all the people listening in Mission. I know there's a lot of hockey fans out there. You have an absolute murderer's row of fast food restaurants.
Yeah, he's right. I've been there.
Do go on.
It has, like, there's almost like a fried chicken alley out there. Like, you hit Popeyes, and then you're like, whoa, KFC right around the corner. There's a Burger King there.
Yep.
I haven't seen a Burger King in Canada in a long, long time.
There's one in Richmond on Station Highway.
There's one like a block from my house.
Really?
Oh,
there's one right by the SkyTrain station.
Only one I remember was the one on Granville Street.
No, there's one in Devon.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess I don't get out to the
Burger
King. They've
got a quesada. Richmond's the hub. They've got a Brownies. Everyone's got an A&W, but they do it all.
Mission is to market.
What if we do Port Moody's
Dairy
Craft
Queen,
Brewery,
Tim
bro,
Hortons,
but it's just Burger fast
yeah.
food.
Market this. They need to put this out there.
Listen, I like to shout out all the areas.
A walk box and a noodle box. Yeah, both boxes.
I mean,
Fat Burger.
I just wanted to shout out Mission. It was great to visit. I honestly was there. I'm like, I don't think I've ever been to Mission, right?
But now you're going back.
The fast food capital of the world. There,
we need to be able to do something with Fried Chicken Alley. By the way, like that. if you are in Mission,
it's like the Hammock District, but fried chicken.
Oh, the Hammock District.
If you're in Mission right now and you have a chance to update the Welcome to Mission sign, it should say Welcome to Mission, and then it's small print underneath. Please visit Fried Chicken Alley.
Go Outlaws, by the way.
Fried Chicken Alley, 5 kilometers.
Yeah, right?
I'm going to read this one, too. What we learned after you guys talked about disc golf, I did some research into courses. In Langley, there is Raptors Knoll, a championship course. That's from Nicholas in Poco. That sounds like a very high-end ball golf course. Like,
what's it called?
Raptors Knoll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's way too highbrow for Frolf.
That sounds dangerous.
Don't call it
Frolf. Bird kind of raptor or like raptor?
Show up to Raptors Knoll and be like, did everyone bring the frisbees?
Please leave.
Dino Bravo, what we learned.
The wrestler?
Yeah, it is. Hronek is not showing well to start these playoffs. Looks soft and tentative. I say, let him go and keep Myers and Zadorov. It will be much easier to find a right-handed D partner for Hughes than it will be to replace Myers and Zadorov. I think they're going to be able to keep Myers because I think he'll take a hometown discount. I'm pretty sure.
Wants to be here.
He wants to be here. He's already made a lot of money in his career. He seems happy in the area. So, I thought that might happen with Luke Shen too, and then he got a big offer from Nashville. He's like, I'm taking this offer. But, you know, don't forget that the Canucks also traded Luke Shen to Toronto before that all happened. So maybe that affected his relationship with the Canucks. But the way these playoffs are going and the way that Rick Tocchet has constantly been talking up Zadorov, I really wonder if he's trying to make his case publicly to his bosses to keep Zadorov.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I don't even know if it needs to be like that level of like 4D chess or whatever you want to call it. Like, I think he could probably just go upstairs and be like, please keep Zadorov, right?
Doesn't maybe just Hronek wishes he was the one who was on vacation in 1 week. Secretly,
talking
he
was like
the
Hronek
one.
Was good, but you know who was really good? Zadorov.
Let's say we had a bag of money. No, okay. James in Qualicum Beach. Hashtag WWL, what we learned. What I learned after watching lots of Preds fan coverage is that many of their fans think Game 4 was a season-ending loss. I saw this as well. I also saw a lot of visceral hate for Andrew Burnett, of all people. Like, he was in any way, shape, or form at fault for this. I understand that when fans are angry, they lash out, and sometimes blame gets scattered everywhere, and people get in the crosshairs. But I would say that my impressions from the Preds through four games are pretty good team, pretty well coached, don't make a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They just have had zero luck. The game two, actually, where he got them to buy into blocking approximately 973 shots. That's a good example of coaching right there. Like it, you know, both strategically and motivationally. Like I think Brunette's a good coach.
I think it was Bick on this station that was talking about the fronting by the Nashville Predators, and I had to agree with him. There should be a way to beat that. You know, like you're leaving guys open in front of the net a lot of the times when you're fronting. You're not choosing to box out. You're basically just being like, okay, I'm going to try and get away in the shots. I'm going to try and get away of passes, but I'm not necessarily going to pay attention to this guy who's wide open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it was him and Dodd were having a conversation about it, and I found myself nodding my head a lot. I guess it's because Drance wasn't with them.
Right.
Right.
That's
so
a big
I
part
was
of
like,
it.
These guys are making some good points.
This is a great show.
But, you know, I think one of the ways that you beat the fronting is, man, work the puck down low. Like, I know it's easier said than done sometimes, and a lot of that is what Rick Tocchet says. Like, if you work the puck down low, then you are going to have to win some battles,
mm-hmm.
right? But if your immediate response to skating into the offensive zone is to stop up and then pass it back to the point, that is playing right into the Preds' hands.
Sure.
So, you know, get that puck down into the corners, behind the net, and then just grind your way to the front of the net. And in some ways, you might not even have to grind.
G-Man from Delta, hashtag WWO, what we learned. I learned that we have maybe the best goaltending depth in the league, we being the Vancouver Canucks. What with the best goalie coach in Ian Clark, having his input into drafting his type of goalie, and Rick Tocchet's hands-off policy of, I don't even know what he does. Yeah, I mean, this has been a resume builder. If he needed any more resume building for Ian Clark, I'll say that. Because other teams have gone to like a third goalie before, like Vegas, for example, right? I mean, Logan Thompson, if they had everyone healthy and what they should have been, he would have been their third guy. But to have the high-end goalie, like you've got a goalie who's been nominated for a Vezina, mm-hmm. in Thatcher Demko. Casey DeSmith is a good, solid, trusty backup, you know, although he's hurt right now. She loves... To come in and do the job that he did deserves a ton of credit. And, you know, I think that it's a really, really good group. You've seen more teams go to three in general. Like, we've heard Woodley talk about it, that you need three goalies to get through an NHL season. When you get down to the third goalie in the playoffs, I think in earlier years you would have been like, well, you're cooked. Now you're like, you know what? We might be able to pull this off. And that's the situation the Canucks are in right now.
I'm getting a lot of restaurant recommendations for Mission right now.
Are they all fast food restaurants?
Rocky's Diner.
Yeah, that's appeared a few times.
Yeah.
Now I want to go.
Mm-hmm. I love a good diner.
Oh, diners are great.
Now, I will have to apologize for not knowing that there are so many Burger Kings out there. I do not care for Burger King. I don't
really?
Think it's very good
you,
at all.
You don't like Whoppers?
You don't like the Charbroil?
No.
Burger
no.
King?
I don't like going in there and it's all...
He's not wrong.
Whoppers are delicious.
It's all
sloppy.
Smoky.
It's too
isn't
sloppy.
It? But don't you go in there, too, and it's, like, smoky because it's, like, flame broiled.
In the restaurant?
Yeah.
It's never smoky.
No,
it's
I
like
have had that experience in Granville.
What?
Charbroiled.
No. Maybe stuff's catching on fire.
They make
yeah,
you,
you went to the wrong burger.
They make you spoiled for charbroiled.
Yeah. I think Whoppers are just, like, so average.
Wow.
You know what
wow.
it is? They're too sloppy. Like, it's a sloppy Whoppy, a slopper Whopper. There's a reason that they called it the Whopper.
Sloppy
Whopper. Are you eating it with a knife
burgers?
And fork? Just stuff it in your face.
Being
sloppy
no, no, no.
does not mean it's
don't,
a bad burger.
If you stuff it in your face, it'll be even sloppier. Don't do that.
You can have a delicious burger, and if it's sloppy, that doesn't mean it's not good.
But it is. It does.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. No, I mean, I just
some
don't.
Some of the best burgers I've ever had.
I don't care for Burger King. I think it's overrated. And that's why I don't know about it.
Sewering our sponsors' possibilities.
I'm a Rocky's Diner guy. And I always will be.
Let's be real. Burger King was never going to get on board with this show.
Not now.
Okay, we got a few more what we learns here. You read the one. Did you read the one from G-Man from Delta?
Yes.
About the goaltending?
Yes.
Norm from Richmond.
Would you like
me
to do another one? Because I have many at the ready because I'm a professional.
Are you? Norm from Richmond, what we learned.
I did say how dumb are I earlier in the show, but I am a professional. I know
how dumb are I?
I was waiting to play that.
He card read good.
I got a voice ingy. Okay, my voice is ingy.
Wrist ingies was amazing yesterday. You can see Dollywell just getting more and more flustered. My voice was incredible.
He's had the wrist ingies.
Norm from Richmond, what we learned. You trade Besser while his stock is high. We're going out on this before he gets hurt again.
Are you kidding me?
Use cap space to pick up Gensel, then wait for PD to get hot and trade him too.
Well, we're not going to talk about Besser's hat trick, but we will speculate on trades.
The last thing we're going to do before the show ends, damn it. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to pick a better one to go out on. What we learned, this is from Fishy and Langley. I think Ryan O'Reilly is going to be in beast mode tonight. Wait a minute. This isn't a good one to go out on.
Who's flagging these?
Your Lord.
Yeah.
Terrible way to end.
And here's one from Tom and Tawasin. What we learned, we're all going to die.
Okay.
Have fun tonight watching the game. It's going to be a great night of hockey.
Well, Threadco Print Shop will be happy about this. All Canucks playoff coverage is brought to you by Threadco Print Shop. They make custom decorated apparel easy. Speak to their friendly, creative team for your next screen printing or embroidery project today. Visit them at threadcoprint.com.
Lost another one.
We got to go. Signing off. I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Bruff. He's been A-Dog, and he's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. How dumb are I?